Welcome to the second part of the lecture, which discusses religion and nationalism in Pakistan. This part of the lecture will mostly discuss two questions. As you remember, Pakistan came into existence after a very divisive campaign of Muslim League, which emphasized that Islam is in danger and Hindus and Muslims cannot live in the same state. But then in the independent Pakistan, the leaders of the state, they faced two kinds of problems. First one of them, how to define citizenship in a country which was originally created for Muslims, but in which all its inhabitants were not Muslims. And second, how to find unifying symbols and unifying cultural identity for the newly created nation of Pakistan. In his work on nationalism, Benedict Anderson has noted that one of the paradoxes of nationalism is that although nationalism is almost universally accepted political system and the world is full of nation states, simultaneously each nation state thinks that it is unique and it is separate from other nations. And this problem is very acute in the case of Pakistan, because India and Pakistan, they share the same historical past, they share the same cultural heritage, but then suddenly a new state, nation state of Pakistan is created. So what would be the culture of Pakistan? What would be the cultural identity of Pakistan so that it would be something different from India?
When Pakistan came into existence in 15th August 1947, Jinnah, the father of nation, gave a speech in which he also addressed the non-Muslim members of the nation. He said that no minority should be afraid in the newly founded state. All would be equal citizens irrespective of their religion. However, after the violent campaign leading to the creation of Pakistan that was based on instigating communal hatred between Muslims and Hindus, this came too late. And anyway, Jinnah died in 1948, merely a year after the founding of Pakistan, and he was able to do very little to stall the wheels of Muslim nationalism. The immense significance of Islam and Muslim identity to Pakistan was also a result of the lack of any other symbols that could be used to create the image of a unified nation. Pakistan had a common history and common culture with India, and the founders of Pakistan were forced to face the question: what would be specifically Pakistani? What is the cultural identity of Pakistan? What is the unique history of the nation of Pakistan? The only immediate answer, in addition to Islam, was the Urdu language and Urdu literature. However, as we saw, Pakistan consisted of two parts, East and West Pakistan. Inhabitants of East Pakistan spoke Bengali, and they felt that Urdu was only a means of West Pakistan to assert its hegemony over them. Thus, Bengali language played a significant role in the struggle for independence in East Pakistan that became Bangladesh in 1971. Thus, Urdu did not become a viable unifying national symbol. Religion was not enough to bind West and East Pakistan together, but it has become the only factor that has at least some potential to become a symbol of national unity in Pakistan. However, emphasis on Islam has in practice also meant the alienation of and discrimination towards non-Muslims. In his work Imagine Communities, Benedict Anderson compares nationalism with religion because of the fervor, emotional response, and dedication it evokes. If we push this comparison a bit further, Constitution can be considered the holy book of nationalism, since it lays the foundations of the nation. In the case of Pakistan, the increasing significance of Islam as the fundamental symbol of national identity is reflected in the gradual Islamization of the Constitution. The first Constitution of Pakistan was drafted in 1956. its references to Islam are still quite few and abstract. It stipulates that Pakistan is an Islamic Republic, yet it says very little about what it means beyond the name. It does state that the president has to be a Muslim, and that no new laws are made if they are in contradiction with the Quran. Yet, the old legislation that was mostly inherited from the British could stay in place. The 1962 constitution takes a step further, since it ordains that a council of Islamic ideology is established to guide the government and the parliament. Although the government and the parliament are not bound to follow their advice, it has been quite difficult to ignore. The recommendations of the Council of Islamic Ideology have in general been very conservative and based on a very strict and puritanical interpretation of Islamic texts. The 1973 constitution states that in addition to the president, also the prime minister has to be a Muslim. The existing laws will have to be Islamized in accordance with the advice of the Council of Islamic Ideology. Even more significant is the amendment that was made into the constitution under Zulfikar Ali Bhutto's government in 1974. This amendment states that a Muslim minority called the Ahmadi movement, whose members consider their founder a messianic figure, are not Muslims. The decision was taken after widespread riots and violence towards the Ahmadi community. What makes this all very interesting is that this is the first instance in history when a nation state takes it to itself to define who is a Muslim and who is not a Muslim. Furthermore, the decision was made under a leadership of a prime minister whose party was ideologically a left-wing socialist progressive party. This incident shows that already in the 70s, political leaders of Pakistan had to bow to the pressure of religious leaders and organizations in order to retain their power. However, Bhutto's move did not protect him from other aspirants to power. He was ousted in 1977 by the general Ziaul-Haq and hanged 2 years later. Ziaul-Haq's period saw the most radical Islamization of Pakistani society. The penal code was Islamized by introducing the punishments mentioned in the Quran, such as amputation and stoning into it. Extramarital relations became a punishable offense, and blasphemy of God, the Quran, and the Prophet Muhammad became a capital crime. In 1984, Ordinance 20 became effective. It stated that the Ahmadis would be punished if they called themselves Muslims or acted like Muslims by, for example, using the Muslim greeting "Assalamu alaikum, peace to you." Zia died in a plane crash in 1988. Yet his legacy has remained. The Islamic legislation put in place under his influence has become an important national symbol, and it has consequently proved very difficult to overturn or even criticize. The blasphemy law, for example, has routinely been used to blame Christians or Muslims belonging to minorities of the offense. When the governor of Punjab, Salman Taseer, had publicly criticized this law, his own bodyguard assassinated him in 2011. The bodyguard, Malik Mumtaz Qadri, was given a death sentence, but he has become a kind of a saintly figure after his execution, and his tomb has become a site of pilgrimage. Whenever the political leaders intend to infringe on the Islamic legislation, the religious leaders very quickly order their followers on the streets. In present-day Pakistan, the Islamic organizations and parties have adopted a role of guardians of the nation's identity and values. When they perceive some misconduct in political leaders, they quickly make clear that his actions are a threat to the nation. Furthermore, the religious leaders are now searching for a new historical narrative that would endow the nation with a more Islamic founder. For them, Jinnah is not a very good father of the nation. Jinnah was educated in London. He was more comfortable speaking English than Urdu. He liked to wear suits made in Savile Row in London. He smoked, he kept dogs, and was not a very observant Muslim. For this reason, many Muslim leaders in Pakistan claim that Pakistan was actually founded Muhammad ibn Qasim, an early Muslim general who had made Sindh, the southernmost province of Pakistan, part of the Arabic Islamic Empire in the 8th century. Although any real links between Muhammad ibn Qasim and Pakistan are purely conjectural, the process is a good example of a nation's urge to imagine for itself a history that corresponds with its ideals. Thus, the power of religious organizations make having a political career very difficult in Pakistan. The present Prime Minister Imran Khan, who has been in power for a bit over a year now, has had to continuously balance between telling that his policies are based on the example of the Prophet Muhammad and the idealized society during his days, and trying to shed the image of Pakistan as a supporter of terrorists in the eyes of the international community. How will he succeed remains to be seen. The gradual Islamization of Pakistani legislation and society are a good example of nationalism, where the significance of religion grows because it is the only symbol that can viably form the basis of a national identity. It also clearly shows that when a single religion is intertwined with national identity, the religious minorities usually suffer and they do not enjoy the same rights as the majority. While only Ahmadis are discriminated against in the constitution, other religious minorities, whether they are Christian, Hindu, Sikh or Shia Muslim, have not fared very well in Pakistan.